Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
405 DGS, happy Tuesday to you. Dave Murray joins us. Hello, Dave.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
You want to start local or you want to go to Florida?
Let's do local because we can get it out of the way very, very quickly.
Okay.
Again, high pressure for us. Everything's in a logjam because of the hurricane. There's also a trough off the West Coast, well off the West Coast. So we're stuck with a high. 42 for the overnight low tonight. Clear skies. Evening temperatures in the 60s. Tomorrow, lots of sunshine. 67 for the high. Wednesday night, 39, 40 degrees. So there will be some spotty frost away from the city, but nothing widespread. If you have houseplants out, they're going to be okay. Just make sure they're a little protected, like against the house. Thursday, sunny, 68. Thursday night, 45. Friday, sunny, 72. The weekend, Saturday and Sunday, sunshine and 75. Nothing really changes because nothing can change until the hurricane gets out of the way.
Okay by me. It's pretty perfect so far.
Yeah, yeah. All right, hurricane. This is a monster. There's no question about it. Very intense for the whole west coast of Florida. The hit right now looks like it will be, let's say, Wednesday morning, probably early morning, the way it's looking right now. It has slowed down quite a bit, but the hit's expected somewhere between Fort Myers and Tampa. Let's not really focus on exactly where the eye makes contact because this thing is huge. Hurricane force winds could be 100 miles around the eye of the storm. It's the fifth major hurricane, Category 3 or higher, and the 12th overall hurricane to hit this region since 1851. So, yes, it's happened before, but it's a pretty rare event just because of the way a storm has to swing into the west coast of Florida. Should be a Cat 3, Cat 4 at landfall, 120-plus mile-per-hour winds. Wind gusts could be 140. Storm surge, the wall of water that rises with the oncoming storm, 8 to 12 feet, spots to 15 feet. Rainfall, 6 to 12 inches, spots to 20 inches. There will be tornadoes as the system makes contact with the land. The storm will and already shows some signs of slowing down. And that means it's going to turn into a long-lasting event. It's not going to be like typical hurricanes that hit and move on. It's going to be around Wednesday, Thursday, maybe even into Friday. It's a very large area of coverage. So really almost every place in Florida is going to feel some kind of effect from this thing. Tampa is the major concern because of the shape of Tampa Bay. We talked about this yesterday, kind of a cul-de-sac shape. So the rising storm surge, it just goes into that bay and doesn't have any place to go other than the landmass. And it looks like it could be a double-hit hurricane. It will come across the peninsula of Florida and then probably hit coastal Georgia, coastal South Carolina, especially southern sections of the coast of South Carolina. Nowhere near as strong, but it could be a double-hit hurricane.
Dave, did I make this up or did you fly in a Hurricane Hunter?
Oh, yes, I have definitely flown in a Hurricane Hunter.
Like, that's my nightmare. Like, that's absolutely, like, the worst thing I can imagine.
I've always described it. It's, first of all, it was about an eight-hour mission. So you're up there a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to explain it is, Dave, you're sitting in your chair, and I'm going to come behind you and shake that chair as hard as I can for 4 or 5 hours.
Sign me up.
But once you get in the eye of the storm, it's like flying on a sunny day.
That's crazy.
But you got to get to the eye first.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Dave Murray's forecast is brought to you by Air Comfort Service Heating and Cooling.
All right, Trisha Clock.
Brought to you by the Good Feet Store, comfort, energy, performance, and pain relief at the Good Feet Store. So Rachel sent me a really good article about, since Rihanna was named to play the Super Bowl halftime show, people you may not have remembered that have been in the Super Bowl. So I was doing some reading and found some really interesting stuff. I did not know that the Super Bowl halftime show really didn't become a thing until like 1991. And before I tell you who that artist was, let me just give you the backstory on the Super Bowl halftime show, because it was mainly, it was marching bands, college marching bands during the halftime show. Or it was
the way
like,
it should be.
Yeah. Tributes to time periods, like they would do a Motown review or something. Like 1989, they really credit kind of with changing it, because the first halftime tried to appeal to non-football viewers. It had 2,000 dancers. It had some element of 3D TV. It had an Elvis impersonator that went by the name of Elvis Presto. That was the big thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis Presto.
He's in the building.
And then 2 years later, Disney was the sponsor of the 1991 halftime show. This halftime show did not even air live on TV because we were in the middle of the Gulf War, and ABC, that was airing the Super Bowl, thought that the public wasn't interested in entertainment. So instead of showing these guys...
And now, to honor our armed forces children, Coca-Cola proudly presents the new kids on the block.
So they had a bunch of Disney cartoon characters, a few thousand local kids, and, you know, you could hear everyone screaming. They were very excited. But again, that didn't air live on TV. They aired an update on the war. And actually, nobody really remembers who played the halftime show. They did end up airing it afterwards, but some affiliates didn't even take it because they didn't care. So wow. A lot of people didn't even see them. But the only thing anyone ever talked about from 1991... Whitney Houston performing the national anthem, and it was the first time the national anthem was certified platinum because it was released as a single.
Did they, now I'm acting like you're a professor, did they used to have celebrities do the national anthem before that, or is that kind of the one that kicked it off?
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't remember.
I mostly read about the halftime shows. Yeah, I don't know about the Star Spangled Banner. I would assume they did not, just because of how everything I was reading, but I don't quote me on that. We're only doing halftime shows, Dave.
Sorry.
Okay. And then, so that was 1991, and that was the first time they had like a real pop artist. And then 1992 was a disaster. So they had, it was in Minnesota, and they had this PR company come in, and I mean, they had 35-piece snowflake drill team, whatever that means, 60 professional dancers. They had 20 ballroom couples. They had 30 costume showgirls. They had 60 dancers. And then at the end, also Dorothy Hamill and Brian Botano skated out because the Winter Olympics were that year. So they were just throwing a little nod to that. And then Gloria Estefan closed it out. And during that 1992 show, Fox, I'm not sure who aired it, but it wasn't Fox. Oh, CBS, sorry. So CBS, and so Fox famously aired an In Living Color show opposite that, which drew 22% of the Super Bowl audience. They even had a countdown clock on In Living Color, like, this is when you can return to the game. Because is huge. 22% of their audience left to go watch another network.
Dorothy Hamill.
Yeah, right. I had her haircut.
Drill team.
So that was pretty famous. So then after that 1992 debacle, 1993, they're like, all right, we got to turn this around. We got to get somebody big. They got Michael Jackson. And he asked for $1 million, but they did not pay halftime performers, and they still don't to this day.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, but there was, but like Justin Timberlake, who did, which obviously that was a notable halftime show in 2004, he saw a 534% jump in song sales after he performed. So that's they get it. Yeah, they get it afterwards, but Michael Jackson was asking for $1 million. So in the end, Frito-Lay was the league's partner, and they offered a $100,000 donation plus a 30-second TV spot to Michael Jackson's Heal the World Foundation in return for him doing the Super Bowl. And then 7 months after that is when the first accusation of child sexual abuse came out against Michael Jackson.
Yikes.
Yeah, so 7 months after he did the Super Bowl. But there were some, like, really big bombs, I mean, over the years. Obviously, 2004 was a big, huge controversy with Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake. I think if anybody, if you ask people what were the top ones, they would probably just say that from the shock factor of it all. Like, because you probably remember where you were when you saw it and what you were doing. My favorite's Prince, because he was playing in the rain.
It's amazing.
Yeah, playing Purple Rain in the rain. It was so great. But, I mean, so many people. Rolling Stones, The Who, they did not get a good review.
No.
Also, Black Eyed Peas with Usher and Slash, because Fergie did a really bad Sweet Child of Mine version and nobody liked it. And then during Madonna's in 2012, MIA gave everyone the finger. So that is talked about. Yeah, you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2015, of course, Katy Perry had the Sharks.
Oh, yes.
Everybody talked about the Sharks.
Left Shark.
Left Shark, right Shark. Nobody was happy about Maroon 5. That was kind of a
foreshadowing.
That was, yeah, and that was also the Colin Kaepernick year, so they wanted them to pull out, and Rihanna actually turned down the opportunity that year because of Colin Kaepernick. Just a little history of the Super Bowl.
Extensive.
Wow.
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I do too.
Thank you, Professor Trish.
Sure. Well, I just thought it had been a big thing forever. I guess I really didn't stop and think that only 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That it really became what it is. And now I almost feel like it's kind of out of control.
Yeah.
With the ads, too. We talked about this. I mean, how do you keep one-upping?
Yeah, it's just, I was thinking about it while you were describing all this, Trish. It's like we started so buttoned up, like college bands playing. And then it was like, wait, we could get celebrities involved with this. And it just kind of feels like that's how culture works. It's like we figure out a way to put celebrity in a position, and then it just ramps and ramps and ramps. And now we are where we are with the Super Bowl. We see where we are with politics. What else is it going to bleed into?
No offense to present company, who still likes to fancy himself as marching band fit, but I can't think of anything more boring than marching bands. Like going all the way. Oh, I forgot. Dave, what did you play?
Nothing. I just like a college marching band.
He disrespects the craft.
That's even dorkier.
I'm not going to lie. I don't mind watching them either. I'm with you, Dave Murray. I think it's kind
of
cool.
To the flavor of a college game.
I will say, to Dave's credit, Glover's credit, I did not even really like it when I was in it. It was just like an avenue.
Just a way to stay fit.
Show off to find chicks. Get
actually,
girls. Kinda, yeah, right.
Yes. That's actually true. It's where all my friends were. It's where all the girls were. I was in great shape.
And
it got me out of some classes because you didn't have to do like any kind of physical classes like PE or
so
any kind of electives.
Were you the bad boy of the band?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was the tough guy.
This is so stupid. I just do it for my pets.
You go to band camp?
That is unfortunately way too accurate. Yes, I did. It was 2 weeks before school started, and it was grueling. Because it was like
grueling.
It was 9 hours a day. You're out in the sun on a football field.
Doing what?
Doing, like, practicing.
For 9 hours a day?
You have to learn.
That is intense.
You have to learn the drill. You have to learn the routine. You have to learn the steps and where you're going.
Was this just your band, or was it a bunch of bands? Is it like Baptist camp where people come from all over the place?
No, it was just our band. But each school had their own. So, like,
their own band camp.
Yeah. So, like, you know, they all had their own school bands. 14 through 17. Because it was all
high school. Girlfriend while you're there?
Yeah. And because I worked hard in marching band, and that impressed
you. You were
everyone.
The hot one.
How many times have you seriously said that one time at band camp?
All the time, because that's where everything happened. It made me poop again. It was when everyone was crammed in together for two straight weeks for 9 hours a day.
Yeah, you probably said that all the time until that bit came out. And you're like, what?
After the bit came out, it's like, well, I guess we'll talk about what we did that time at band camp.
That's awesome. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
All righty.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 425. Just time for one audio. I'd love to play mine.
No. I want to play mine. I'm so excited about this. So I found this last night. They're doing Celebrity Wheel of Fortune, which I like Wheel of Fortune. And just as a side note.
Try to be
like
cuter.
Turtles. Like turtles. And Snoop Dogg was on. And Snoop Dogg, his favorite hobby is obviously smoking weed. So I think he was maybe a little high in the clouds for this edition of Wheel of Fortune, and he keeps buzzing in first, and he's so confident trying to solve, and he keeps getting every puzzle wrong, and it's just so great.
And it's Snoop baking onions. No, everybody else is in it now. Amanda
baking brownies.
Yes.
Baking onions.
It keeps going.
Martha is
going
to be disappointed. Martha's going to be upset.
That's your whole bag.
That's Snoop. Toilet Atlas. I have no idea. But Mark, talented artist. But can we give the money to Snoop anyway? Snoop. Swallowing the knot. No, that's not right. Everybody else now, Amanda.
Sweetening the pot?
Yeah, there you go. Airport teacher. No, everybody else now. Amanda.
Acting teacher.
Yeah.
As you can see, like, everyone else is solving right after him. Like, it's like he's skipping the blanks and trying to solve.
I would watch that every day.
Airport teacher.
Toilet Atlas.
Toilet Atlas.
Was anyone, like, was he laughing? Like,
yes.
Okay.
Like, especially after the first one, he was dying laughing at baking brownies.
Baking onions.
So good.
Baking onions.
That's really funny.
That was good.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. It's time for the Think Tank. We have two veterans here. We have Mike Elam, who just told a very disturbing story, and Peter Meredith, who I think he was just trying to get in Peter's head, which I think he did.
Very effective.
Yeah. I think Peter's going to be conservative now.
I wouldn't go that far now.
I've noticed that Peter has pulled the antibacterial wipes closer to him since I told that story, which I don't really blame him.
Okay. So I don't know if you guys were listening. I'm not offended if you weren't. On the way in, I read a quote from G.K. Chesterton, which I find fascinating, and it was used by the newly elected Italian leader, the female conservative. And it was on Tucker Carlson last night, and his point was basically, listen to this quote. And she quotes Chesterton here, which I will read, making the point that it's so clear that there are men and there are women, and gays silly, and boys don't become girls, and girls don't become boys, and that's so silly. And I heard the quote, and I said, I agree with that quote, just the opposite way. It's silly that you're denying elections. It's silly that QAnon, but here's the quote. We shall soon be in a world in which a man may be howled down for saying that two and two make four, in which furious party cries will be raised against anybody who says that cows have horns, in which people will persecute the heresy of calling a triangle a three-sided figure, and hang a man for news that grass is green. And I thought, how prophetic, because that's really where we are.
Yeah.
We're all cocksure of everything. We just see things completely differently. Discuss.
Where to begin? I mean, look, I'll jump in and say I certainly agree with you that black and white and facts seem to be hard for us to agree on these days. Obviously, we might disagree on which facts those are that are obvious. But I will say applying that to gender and things like that, there's also the reality of observation and experience and listening to people that have a different experience than yours. And I think what we all need to do a better job of is hearing when somebody's talking about their experience of the world, that's likely something we should listen to. When they're talking about an objective, provable fact, that gets a little grayer, and we can be like, no, I can see the election results. I can see Republican and Democratic election officials saying the same thing. But when I hear people talk about kids and adults experiencing gender in dramatically different ways than I have in my life, I feel like it's my job to listen to what their experience is.
It's an interesting point.
I just think it's interesting to see how we've changed so much and how we've ended up where we are. I saw a guy posted a thing the other day that said, God made man, God made woman, Democrats made the other 57 genders. And I was like, okay. We start off so far apart these days that it's so hard to find a middle area that we agree upon. And if we do find a middle area that we agree upon, rather than that become the starting point of how we're going to work together, it becomes the starting point of how we can argue. And we didn't used to be at that point. What bothers me more than anything else is trying to figure out why we got here. And we didn't do it in one fell swoop. We've done it inch by inch. You know, that little thing, inch by inch, it's a cinch. Well, inch by inch, we have ended up to where we are. And I mean, I'm that traditional conservative kind of guy who's like, I believe in family structure and all these things. My father's a retired Southern Baptist minister from Northwest Arkansas. So yeah, so he just went, okay, I get you now. I understand where you are. And you would be right. But just to see morality get pushed little by little by little by little is where you end up with something like that, to where 20 years ago even, we never would have thought that we would be having the discussions that we're having today in normal conversations of things where you go, wow, I never thought that would be okay to say in public, but it is now.
For example, do you have an example? Anything come to mind?
I guess I would just say broader in decency, how we treat each other,
yeah.
Right? So when we were growing up, I'm not sure how old you are, but I know we're similar age, yeah. And I'm guessing
I'll be 40.
I started to say, I'm guessing you're younger than me based on the age of your children and based on the age of our children. So you used to have a common decency where you would never call the president of the United States a liar in public. You may use some other words and you may say, you know, that's not the whole truth, or he's taking some liberties in what he's saying there. Those are the kind of words yeah. that you would use. You would clean it up and you would give sort of a backhand type sure. swat. You would never be so deliberate to say you're a liar. And we do that everywhere now. And I think
though,
go ahead.
I got to push back slightly because
okay.
I agree. I think that we all do we're not doing as good a job of being decent to each other and leading with kindness, leading with understanding. But there is also something to be said for, I think, especially with the last president, we saw a dramatic change in what was acceptable for politicians to say and for politicians to outright lie and openly, verifiably lie. And when that starts to happen, it's also important for others of us to be able to say, you are lying.
I don't think politicians lying is new. I really don't.
I do think the degree has changed.
This is really interesting. Let's drill down on this.
Okay.
I see what you're saying. Like politicians, I know they're lying. Their lips are moving. But Peter, I
think it used to be that if you got caught in a lie that was verifiably a lie, it often ended political careers.
Yeah.
I mean, even making a promise in a campaign, right? No new taxes, something like that. Then you do new taxes, there's a punishment there. And I think that it used to be you say something deeply offensive or cruel as a politician or super sexist or some other kind of offensive statement. There were political consequences. When that stopped happening and it became a sign of political bravery to be politically incorrect or disrespectful, it also meant we had to call people offensive or liars when they do that.
But I think it varies on how we used to make people pay penalties and what those penalties were. I don't think they were done. I mean, there is all kinds of video of Joe Biden running for president in 1988 lying about a bunch of stuff, lying about where he finished in law school, lying about awards that he got, lying about things that he did. verifiable, to use your words earlier, verifiable untruths, lies. But yet he didn't. So he got kicked out of the presidential race. And if you go back and pull up the old video clips from 88, well, he lost.
Yeah. And there was what?
Plagiarism, he lost the primary. Yes.
A speech that he used.
Yes.
There were consequences. But that's my point.
But the consequence was he didn't lose his Senate seat. He still stayed a U.S. senator. And what happened? He went on to be the vice president, now he's gone on to be the president. So tell me about consequences again.
Well,
those true consequences?
What I see there is somebody that also owned some of their mistakes.
No, and he hasn't. I would completely disagree with that. I could point to 20 times in the last year
that he has apologized for things that he's done wrong. Find me a single time that Donald Trump has acknowledged a mistake of any kind. And I think that's what's different here.
But I don't think this is all because of Donald Trump. The world didn't become where we are because Donald Trump showed up on the scene.
No, admittedly, it started before Donald Trump with people like Rush Limbaugh changing what proper discourse in political dialogue was.
And the
sort of hatefulness that sold him. I mean, that made him money and built an audience because he was openly hateful.
All right.
That changed things.
This is part of the really, really good discussion we're going to pick up right there. Welcome back, guys. Think Tank here with Mike Elam and Peter Meredith. Peter is a rep from the 80th. Any follow-up on what we're just talking about, or do you want to switch topics? We can do either one. Because you guys were making great points about, you know, discourse and how coarse discourse is, and don't call the president a liar, but what if the president is a liar, and so forth.
The only thing that I would follow up, we were just kind of talking off the air of, you know, it's all about Trump. And in my opinion, it's not all about Trump. He was just sort of the latest flashpoint that we've come to. And he's the latest highest mountain that we've made it. We were talking about the fact of all through my life, I've seen it ratchet up a little bit more and a little bit more with every president that we've had, going back from Reagan, who was my first president that I got to vote for when I was in college, all the way up until now. And with every president since, it has ratcheted up a little bit more and a little bit more. Trump took it to a whole new level because Trump's always been a whole new level. Going back to before, in the 70s, he was a whole new level of just that New York thing.
But it's not just that it's a whole new level, right? I mean, with Trump, you have an entire party where in order to stay elected, you have to essentially swear an oath of loyalty to Trump. You can't say a public bad thing about Trump. And
you had to do that in the 80s with Reagan.
If you're a Republican,
and it's the same deal. If you're a Democrat, you can say bad stuff about Trump. That helps you.
Democrats say bad things about Biden every day, though. That's the difference. We are happy to criticize our own.
You listen to different media sources than I do. I never hear a Democrat.
Have you talked to a single progressive in St. Louis? Because I can tell you, most of them are unhappy with Biden for X, Y, and Z. They still like him better than the Republican option.
To be fair, I don't have a big crew of progressive friends.
But they're getting reelected. I mean, look at Cori Bush. She's happy to be critical of the president and of Democrats all the time. What happened with the congressional primaries here is you won't have a single Republican go back to office or even go into office if they didn't first say that they were willing to say that the election was stolen and Donald Trump won, which is verifiably false. That is their way of signaling an oath of loyalty to this guy.
I don't think that's true. I don't think you're not seeing a lot of Republicans these days who are on the ballot right now are not out talking about the election was stolen. A lot of them are not talking about that. They're like, and I hear, and I am a Fox guy, right? So I watch Fox on a regular basis. I watch Republicans say it's time to turn the page and move forward. It's time to, you know, that is done. Every one of them that I see on television every night
that won a primary. Because what's happened is,
but they're talking about it's time to turn the page and move forward. They're not talking about the election was stolen. They're saying it's time to turn the page and move forward.
And
that is in
the
past.
Election, what's their answer?
It's time to turn the page and move forward. That's what they're saying.
But don't you think, Mike, that for a lot of them, the smart ones, it's because they're ready to puke from lying so much. Because the smart ones know that the election wasn't stolen, but they have to say it. And I believe you that they're tired of it. They want to stop saying it. But
I believe that also.
But I think that if you ask them point blank, like Hawley, they'll say yes, because they have to.
You don't win elections by going back and refighting the past. You don't win that way. That's how you lose. You've got to move forward. Elections are always about forward.
Isn't that precisely how Eric Schmidt won his election? By doing things like suing to invalidate the presidential election and continuing over and over again to file amicus brief after amicus brief, going back and relitigating that and standing up for Donald Trump?
Right, we're late. I'm getting yelled at by Andrew.
Okay.
We have plenty of time on the other side of the break, though.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.